Good afternoon. Welcome once again to KMRY's Newsmakers, a weekly program highlighting the people of our communities and the issues they face. I'm Chris Jensen, proud to serve as your host each week. Today our guest is Cedar Rapids Fire Chief Greg Smith. Chief Smith is the 14th paid fire chief in the history of the department. We discuss several topics with Chief Smith, including the adjustments the department has made because of the pandemic, the derecho, recruitment, public safety programs, and more. We begin our conversation learning more about Chief Smith and his background.
I have been with the Cedar Rapids Fire Department for 27 years plus now. Joined the department in July of 1994 as a firefighter. Promoted to captain in 1999. Promoted to battalion chief in 2009. Assistant chief in 2011. And been the fire chief for the last 2.5 years.
2019 is when you became the fire chief.
Yes.
Within a year, you were dealing with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And within a year and a half, you were dealing with a derecho, which affected our entire city. How did that change your objectives?
Dramatically, you know, and a couple of different things. One, you know, obviously we're not immune to national level disasters with the 2008 floods. And you always think, you know, or I always thought that was a once in a career event, you know. So the response to and recovery from the floods, once in a career, won't see something like that again. And of course, the, you know, speaking of the pandemic first, that's just an odd thing. Just with this level of pandemic, I think the last one obviously was, what, 1918 with the Spanish influenza.
Yes.
And so, you know, kind of in the back of my mind, people talked about pandemics and I'm like, yeah, we won't see that. Times have changed, you know, healthcare is better, you know, all that type of stuff. And it really threw a wrench into a lot of our long-term plans. We were just starting to do or planning to do a lot of, we were just about to embark upon a request for proposal for a state, I'll call it a station location study or master plan, just to see where all of this, you know, if we had stations in the right places, what we needed to be moved,
sure.
You know, just kind of the capacity response profiles, that type of stuff. And as soon as the pandemic hit, you know, the city, of course, had to start scaling back and what wasn't urgent. And that's one of the things we've pushed off for that. So, you know, and it went just into figure things out now mode.
We've had to do that a lot.
Yes, yes.
And that has affected your, not just your public service programs that you have for seniors and kids, but your protocol too for your firefighters who are out on the line when they go on calls.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it became first and foremost during the pandemic, we really drew back and didn't shut down, but went remote or, you know, didn't do in-person visits with a lot of, you know, obviously seniors and our Remembering When program in the school district and that type of stuff with the Learn Not to Burn program and that type of stuff. And then, as you mentioned, our protocols changed dramatically with the shortage of personal protective equipment. You know, we ordered what we could, but we actually had, I'll call it kind of a grassroots. We had a group of firefighters who really took and did some research and did some testing on how can we take what is disposable personal protective equipment and use it multiple times just so that we can make sure all of our crews are protected all of the time. And so, you know, it was, you know, we purchased home-baked oven, you know, the toaster ovens.
Okay,
and that we used that to sanitize our N95 masks and that type of stuff temporarily because we couldn't get ones until we could, the supply chain opened up. So just a lot of, again, just everybody just rose to the occasion and it was fantastic. But it was also very, as everybody knows, very odd times with just
trying to
figure things out and you know, what was the right thing to do and just kind of learning on the fly.
Right. Well, I think a lot of our listeners know that I have a very close connection to the fire department. My husband is one of your captains in the fire department.
Yes.
And I believe he actually came on.
We did.
Together,
We came on together. Litter mates, as we call ourselves. Each new class, it's a new litter coming onto the fire department. And yes, Justin and I came on in 1994 and spent, at that time, 6 weeks in the rookie academy and then out on shift. And so, yeah, so you always have a close tie with the people that you came on with, even if you didn't routinely work with them, you know, through the years. And Justin and I were usually on opposite shifts and so didn't work together a ton, but still that special connection. So
I just had to mention that because
absolutely.
I know there's, I'm very proud of our fire department,
Thank you.
And I think you're doing a terrific job, and I might be a little biased, but I don't think I am, because I do believe when I hear people out in public They all have very good things to say, especially with the way you've handled the pandemic. Moving on to the derecho then. Yes, the derecho, which was absolutely 100% unprecedented as well.
Yes, yes.
And there were just so many issues. You had a citywide blackout, essentially. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get through streets. How did you deal with that the minute it happened? Did you know, kind of had an idea what was going on?
Kind of very interesting. It was a little bit like the floods. I mean, I knew a bad storm was coming our way that morning. My daughter at that time lived in Ames and just...
Oh, so you had a kind of a...
Yeah, I had kind of a preview.
Right.
And I had just by chance called or texted her or something about 10 o'clock that morning, and she didn't answer, and she got back to me and said, sorry, I was in the basement of my apartment complex. In the basement for what? She said, this storm is nasty. Kind of gave me the overview, and I'm like, okay. And you know, I'm like, well, we're going to have a good old-fashioned Midwest thunderstorm coming, you know, and a severe one, but thinking it's going to be a typical Iowa bad thunderstorm. And then once the wind started picking up and they were here, and actually the siren sounded, 30, 40 seconds before it got dark and nasty, or maybe
I would like
longer.
To say I know, but I had a colonoscopy and endoscopy that day, so I was out.
Oh, boy.
I know, right? So Justin was home with me, and he was just standing out in the, and all of a sudden he's like, gotta go.
Yep.
So yeah, wish I could tell you what happened. I just know there was a freight train outside my window. That's what I thought. I'm like, what is waking me up?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was exactly that. And I knew it was coming. And then the siren sounded when it was still nice and sunny. And then, you know, again, whatever it was, 45 seconds, 60 seconds later, got nasty. Winds picked up. And then, you know, I'm thinking typical thunderstorm. The winds come up. They howl for 45 seconds, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. And then they, you know, then you just got your typical thunderstorm. And when they weren't dying down, it's like, oh, this is unprecedented.
Yeah.
And actually, Andy Olson, our assistant chief of operations, he got contacted by our dispatch, and their windows were rattling, and they were afraid the windows were going to break and they might lose dispatch. And so he said, I'm heading over there. And so on en route, he called me when the cell phone still worked. he called me and said, we need our urban search and rescue team. And this was 15 minutes into the storm at most. And that's when it really came clear to me that this is really bad. If we need them now, things are bad.
Right.
And so again, just our crews really just responded along with PD, Public Works, everybody.
Sure.
We formed our city incident management team. We sent a page out to them, and we had everybody at our command post at Central Fire by about 3 o'clock. But our crews just went to work. Public Works put the plows on their apparatus and just started plowing trees just so we had emergency access first. So it was use plow routes, get emergency access.
Sure.
It was a record number of calls that we had that day. Just unbelievable.
I don't think I saw Justin that entire week. Yeah. I think he was at the was at the station.
And it was the number of calls too. It was the streets being blocked and the number of calls. And we're very fortunate that we have mutual aid agreements with all of this. Well, actually everybody in Linn County, all the fire departments, but you know, we were responding, we were sending resources into Marion. Marion was sending resources to us. Same with Hiawatha. I believe Swisher, their township fire department responded to some incidents on 380 just because we didn't have the time.
Sure.
Where we typically send 5 apparatus plus a battalion chief to a structure fire, we were sending 2 trucks and a battalion chief just because, again, the number of calls that we had that day, and serious calls, not, you know, you know, not things that people couldn't break free of to go to a structure fire. So,
And then it was also a blackout. So people had issues even calling because cell phones were down, phones were down.
Yep.
Everything. The whole city came to a screeching halt, essentially.
It really did. It really did. And the saving grace is we upgraded our radio system. I don't remember exactly when, 10 years ago or so. And a little bit of a difference in 2008, our radio system went down for public safety, and we were actually using just what's called a talk around channel and exchanging cell phone numbers with each other. Just, we had people out in boats, and I would call them on the cell phone if they were out of the radio range. And so it was just the opposite during the derecho. Our radio system held up fantastically. Actually, all the 911 calls, when they got inundated, they rolled over to Johnson County, and then they're rerouted back up here. So that system worked as it should.
Oh, great. Yeah.
But of course, as everybody knows, our cell phones went down, and so it became difficult to manage the incident and be able to talk to the emergency management agency and other response partners in that planning and organization phase.
Now, I know there was a city action plan that came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It is online, and I'm sure most of our listeners haven't looked at it. I know I've talked to Jeff Pomerantz and I've talked to the mayor. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about what that said, or is that going to help you? Because I mean, there was absolutely no way you could have known what that derecho was going to do and how to plan for it. Like a flood, you kind of knew.
Right. Right.
The derecho.
A couple of things with that. You know, one thing in emergency services, you always plan for the next disaster. And mm-hmm. Of course, you know, with the 2016 flood, it's like, you know, we've gotten good at that, unfortunately. But you always plan for the next disaster. Mm-hmm. And we actually did a tabletop exercise about 3 to 4 years ago where the Center for Homeland Security, I'm getting that wrong, so I apologize for that. But it's a national, it comes from the federal government. Okay. And they reached out to us and just said, would you be interested in doing this tabletop mm-hmm. exercise? And we planned a tornado going through town and hitting major infrastructure. And, you know, so similar to the derecho, but mm-hmm. on a tornado, it impacts part of the city.
Right.
And then you have other part of the city that's not severely affected, unlike the derecho is different. And so our after action review really is to take a look at, and we do after action reviews on any major call that we have.
Okay.
And when I say major, like a house fire, a structure fire, sure. A major multi-casual accident, that type of stuff. It could be anywhere from informal to mm-hmm. where the crews do a tailboard talk right afterwards to around the kitchen table back at the station to more like our training department formalize it, puts it on. So this is just a bigger scale citywide. So this will help us moving forward. We're always looking for what went well and how can we improve. And so this is just taking, you know, what went well and how do we institutionalize it, and then what can we improve,
right.
and how can we take that, get better, and institutionalize that for hopefully the next generation will have to deal with the next disaster, but so that it's there for the future.
Yes. Well, we've had three. It's significant natural disasters in a 12-year period, so mm-hmm. much so that National Geographic did an article about Cedar Rapids mm-hmm. We've experienced three natural disasters.
Yes.
And you were here for all of them.
All of them.
But you were in charge.
For, yes.
Yeah, the
yes.
last one, which was the one that was more unprecedented than the floods, because we've dealt with
flooding
obviously.
Before to some degree.
Yes.
And the floods effect devastated, obviously, about 14% of the city mm-hmm. at the time. And it was very devastating. But you also had, you know, the rest of the city that was minimally affected
sure.
at that time. So the derecho affected, obviously, all 130 yeah. plus thousand citizens of the city, plus the county, plus the state of Iowa.
Cedar Rapids Fire Chief Greg Smith. Next week, we continue our conversation with Chief Smith. A copy of this interview will soon be made available online at kmryradio.com. This has been a presentation of locally owned, locally involved, KMRY Cedar Rapids. We'll see you again next week.